Yesterday on RN Breakfast, Julian Savulescu, who's a professor of applied ethics at Oxford University, called for open and honest doping in sport. He told us here on Breakfast that the war on doping was failing and athletes should be allowed to use performance-enhancing drugs as long as they didn't jeopardise their health.
Well, you've had a natural experiment over the last 15 years in cycling of how much doping you can take and still not jeopardise your health. I mean, basically, most of the cyclists in the Tour de France have been taking EPO or even having transfusions of their own blood back or taking growth hormone or testosterone, and they've been beating the tests because they've been taking small amounts. So we know that the levels that they've been taking are consistent with healthy performance. We've already got essentially the physiological endpoint, so we don't need to ramp up the war as people want to do. We just need to say, as long as they're within these boundaries, it's safe enough.
Professor Julian Savulescu speaking to us yesterday on RN Breakfast. Well, after that interview, we were contacted by Professor David Handelsman. He's the director of the ANZAC Research Institute at the University of Sydney. He's also an advisor to the World Anti-Doping Agency. He says this argument is not only irresponsible and reckless, but it would result in drugs being part of school sport. He joins us now. David Handelsman, welcome to Breakfast.
Hi.
Why can't drugs in sport be treated the same as alcohol, and we've got alcohol consumption and breath testing, legally allowed safe levels of alcohol?
Well, look,
or drugs.
You can't wipe away the boundaries by the wave of a hand. For example, if you allow drugs in sport, probably one of the best ways to illustrate what the problems are is to actually ask the athletes themselves. Some years ago, a very good survey was done of around 400 elite Australian athletes, asking them what they thought about drugs in sport, in particular whether they would like to have them legally available. Overwhelmingly, they said no, and the reason is because there's a small number who try to get a cheating advantage over their rivals, but they don't want to have drugs legal because it would become obligatory for all of them to use it. It would become a standard part of training. And in fact, that would percolate all the way down through the system, through sub-elite, through club and through school sports.
Well, let's discuss that. What would be the problem with that from, well, never mind the ethical point of view, but from a health point of view, if there are safe levels of drugs, and Julian Savulescu's point was, the evidence is before us, these people are operating fine and they've been taking these safe levels.
I'm very interested in a philosopher saying something is safe. You know, safe means a proof of a negative, that there's no harm for the rest of life. And I'd love to know whether he'd provide a lifetime warranty for the athletes who are using drugs at the moment. But the reality is there were many inaccuracies in the things he said, and one of them was that athletes know that these levels are safe. Well, when EPO was introduced, for example, there were about 18 European athletes, cyclists, who died suddenly, unexpectedly, mostly in their beds at night, as a result of using EPO. Now, the idea of safety comes from medicine, where drugs are tested for their efficacy and safety in a particular indication. In this situation, what's happening is these are drugs on request, and what athletes actually request, the minority who want to use these, is not the usual dose, but 3 times, 10 times. In steroids, people use sometimes 20 times the dose because they use multiple drugs in various combinations that no doctor would ever recommend or provide a warranty for.
Is that the point, that if you try and regulate and legislate and have doctors prescribing, I mean, doctors are used to prescribing safe levels of drugs, but if you have that regulated, then the athletes who are already involved in doping will just try and push that envelope?
Of course, and that's exactly the point. No doctor or sports organisation would provide any warranty. In fact, athletes are asked to sign waivers for responsibility for that, because it's unknown in the safety. There was a story some years ago about one of the ex-Olympic doctors who got it into his head to start providing athletes with what he called a safe dose of testosterone. And athletes would go there, get that, go to the gym and get more, you know, and then they'd go back to him and get another dose and back to the gym and get more still. Look, the fact is that athletes who are abusing drugs like this, there is no limit, and then that's another boundary. You will have schools who will have to try and develop drug-free sport as opposed to regular sport, or not have sport at schools at all.
And the
reality is that you've either got a barrier, you've got a boundary in the dose, or a boundary within sport somewhere.
The problem is, though, that with the drug testing regime at the moment, it is not working. We've seen every day athletes getting ahead of the testers. Now, you argue that it worked with Lance Armstrong, but Lance Armstrong didn't get tested by the testing. It was the intelligence that led to that.
Let's keep things in perspective. If we develop problems like cybercrime or terrorism that threatens aircraft, we have to keep developing new tests for cybercrime, different types of attack through IT that we've got to defend against. We don't throw our hands up in horror and say, oh, let everyone do what they like. And it's the same in sports. The fact is that when you look at the testing regimes, they are progressively better and better. One of the reasons peptides are around now, and they were looked at in the 90s by a variety of pharmaceutical companies and never made it to market because they're not effective. People use those because all of the more effective remedies have been shut off.
Can I just ask you that about peptides? We're almost out of time, I'm sorry, but it's all about peptides at the moment after this Australian Crime Commission report implicating football codes and others in the use of these. Can you tell us just from your experience, do peptides enhance performance?
Well, look, the facts are that that's not known one way or the other. They were originally intended to produce growth hormone releases, a cheaper, easier way to get growth hormone to be released. All of them didn't make it. A whole variety of companies were trying to do that. None of them made it to market because none of them work. They produce a short burst of growth hormone release, which wears off. Now, whether growth hormone's effective is another matter, but these peptides are not marketed for human use, therefore the way they're put together, I wouldn't feed them to my dogs. The fact is that they're not made to the standard of drugs that are used by pharmaceutical companies.
David Handelsman, we must leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Okay, thank you.
David Handelsman is the director of the ANZAC Research Institute at Concord Hospital at the University of Sydney. He's also an advisor to WADO and the Australian Sports Anti-Doping Authority.